Bankless Nation, happy second week of July. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, this is the last weekly roll-up without the ETH ETF, right?
That's what I heard. This is the one. This is the most likely weekly
roll-up.
For real this time. Yeah.
Well, we're going to keep saying that until it actually is the last weekly roll-up without
How many times ETH until ETF? It's annoying?
Well, we definitely have an update for you there. And David, you are in Brussels. You're recording from Brussels today. So you're at a conference, right?
Yep, that's right. ECC usually happens in Paris, but when Ethereum goes up against the Olympics in an in-person conference, we lose. So we're in Brussels. We got booted off to Brussels, which there are already some stories about Brussels. We'll talk about them in a little bit.
I've seen some tweets. I want to hear about those stories. What else we got on tap?
Bullish week for tokenization. We're going to talk about the BlackRock Builder Fund passing a threshold, as well as other people coming into the tokenization play. Bitcoin had its first 25% drawdown after 427 days without one. So is it over? Can we go up now? When can we go up? Can we go up, please? What else we got, Ryan?
Yeah, please go up. Republicans are adding crypto to their official party platform. This is actually a pretty cool statement, including the right to go bankless, David. And also, Trump might be crypto conference. Was he at ETHCC, David? I don't know. Maybe you could fill me in there.
Trump was not at ETHCC in Brussels.
Oh, he should have been. He missed the best crypto conference. And finally, Ethereum got another based rollup. We're very excited about the based rollup space. And actually, why don't we just start there with our friends and sponsors over at Puffer.
Puffer Unify. Puffer started off as an LST platform, which adapted into an LRT platform. And their whole unique thing is they're leveraging TEE's trusted execution environments just to add just a really strong layer of security around Ethereum staking, around restaking, and then also for the security around their incoming based rollup. So the Puffer Unify chain leverages Puffer's restaked validators, of course, to sequence the Puffer chain. Transactions on Unify can interact directly with other based rollups, including non-Puffer based rollups like Tyco, no bridges, a unified liquidity and app layer. This is one of the paths of Ethereum to solve its fragmentation. This whole thing, based rollups and pre-commitments, have been just a major topic here at ETHCC, one of the big themes. They get fast 100 millisecond pre-confirmation on the Puffer Unify chain, also with the native yield. This chain actually has not launched yet. So if you are a developer, they want you to fill out the form that is linked in the show notes. That's bankless.cc/pufferbuilders. There's also a light paper for you to read for all you researchers out there who just want to keep up in the world of TEEs, base sequencing, layer twos. This has definitely been one of the themes of like LRT projects also expanding into a layer two. At face value, like why is an LRT doing a layer two is probably a question that many people have. But like once you dig into it, there's like a lot of synergies there. And Puffer is definitely leading the way here.
Yeah, very cool. I think based rollups have a very exciting future in the Ethereum landscape. So exciting to see Puffer expand into that. And speaking of that, you were talking about ECC and some of the topics. So what are the vibes at ECC, David? Give me the download. I've been watching a little bit on Twitter, but I got to confess, I saw Vitalik tweets, some Vitalik videos, that sort of thing. But I don't think I have a sense of like what it's like to be on the ground.
Yeah, and I would say other ETHCCs, it has been easier to identify a pretty like core theme, just a phase, a check-in of Ethereum. ETHCC always kind of feels like going 1 year around the sun because it's so consistent. It's middle of July in Paris, this time in Brussels. The content sphere is a little bit more spread out than usual. Pre-commitments, pre-confirmations is a big theme. Base rollups, very adjacent to that, is a very big theme. How to approach MEV on various layers, applications, layer ones, layer twos, app chains, how this all ties together. And then also ZK proving is showing up a little bit more. But these are, so like the whole base rollups conversation is also happening on the back of like the paradigm people, Georgios and Charlie, providing alternative paths to scaling Ethereum. That is maybe
throwing some shade at based rollups.
Yeah, throwing shade at based rollups, saying like we don't, that is an unsolved problem and that's really complicated. And so people are talking about just this kind of like pretty really deep level infrastructure as it relates to Ethereum fragmentation, kind of like kicking the tires all around it. So I would say maybe I was going to draw out one theme of the content of ETHCC, it has been just the refragmentation, the defragmentation of Ethereum with a specific bent on base rollups and pre-commits. then Vitalik also kind of set his own meta of content because he is doing like 10 talks. I asked him this morning.
He's doing 10 talks?
The Thursday, as of the Thursday morning, he has done 6 talks and 4 panels, and he says he's not done yet. These are just his words. I just asked him because people were talking about, like, how many talks did Vitalik do? And I watched one of these talks, and I just assumed, like, oh, he's probably, like, doing the smart thing, which is, like, presenting, like, putting together one talk and giving it in 10 different spaces. And I asked him that. It's like are all of these talks different? And yes, apparently all of these talks are indeed different. He said he spent most of Tuesday writing the slides for every single one of his talks. So he's just like running around ETC, firing off presentations, like no notes, just his slides, and like throwing banger talks. They're pretty great.
Do we have a clip of Vitalik running in the rain to get to a talk here, to a conference?
Yeah, so these are the two tweets that had like a pretty good theme to them, which is that one of them says, when Vitalik Buterin makes an entry like this into a Web3 event in a stormy Brussels rain, it like stormed the first day I was here. There's no stop. You know there's no stopping Ethereum. And this is Vitalik, like, running over a puddle, like, double landing on both feet, like, ready to go. And then there's, like, another one of Vitalik coming in a little bit late to his talk, but just, like, running right into it and then starting his talk, banging out his talk, and then running away from it to go to his next talk. Just like Vitalik doing talks, a ton of talks this time.
Here's a follow-up from Mike.eth. This man changed the history of innovation in blockchain, and he's a billionaire without a bodyguard. Maximum humility. He just kind of lights up a room when he enters it, doesn't he? He's just such an Ethereum vibe there. Actually, speaking of Vitalik, like one of the quotes, I don't know if you saw this talk, David, but I saw this story published in the Block. I haven't seen anything recorded of what he said. I'd be interested in looking at some of the talks. But Vitalik Buterin pushes for Ethereum to respond to 51% attacks in a more automated way. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this is one at least the Block picked up on, is the ability, rather than to solve a 51% attack at kind of the social coordination level, you know how messy that gets, right? With all of the various stakeholders and parties trying to decide, is having a strategy to automate that a bit more. So it's kind of like executed in code or like ready to go. I don't know if that was part of the substance of his talks or if that was just like a side note. Anyway, do you have any highlights of what Vitalik's talking about here?
This one, well, this is where we can invoke the word intersubjective. So this is an intersubjective fault of Ethereum. He says like we can like fix in an automated way in the same way Eigenlayer is doing the same thing with restaking. I was not at this particular talk. All of his talks, generally the theme of his talks are like, okay, here are some so here are the next frontier problems for Ethereum. And also, like, we also know what the solutions are. So let's move forward on them. Kind of just suggestions for layer 2 design, all that kind of stuff. There was also a panel that I walked in on with Justin Drake on a restaking panel with David Say from Babylon. And so, okay, great. Like, I know a pretty good amount about Ethereum staking in Eigenlayer. Let's learn about restaking in Babylon. Let's learn what the differences is. And I get into the panel and it's Justin Drake just arguing with David Say, the founder of Babylon, about the Bitcoin security budget. He's just doing the Justin Drake thing of like, Bitcoin's not secure. They didn't get into restaking
for
like 20
go?
Minutes into the conversation. It was interesting. I mean, I'm always compelled by Justin Drake's arguments. Justin Drake was like doing like jujitsu with this guy, and it kind of felt like he had one arm behind his back, in a good way. But that's just me.
Babylon, if people remember, that's basically an Eigenlayer for Bitcoin. They're behind. Right. I think they've got more research to do, so they're not deployed. They're not in it yet. But that's the idea, is bringing restaking to Bitcoin. So I imagine that was interesting. Mm-hmm. There's reports of people being robbed in Brussels as well. Like, what's up with that? What is going on?
Yeah, I'm hearing like 2 to 3 stories, unique stories a day of like something bad happening. Either like one, a bankless employee, by the way, like was like taken like not far away. She like taken a couple blocks away by her taxi driver, and he's like, "Oh, the card machine doesn't broke. Pay me cash." Also, we happen to be at an ATM. And like a different bankless employee had to like go over there and like strong was just like be a presence to like allow her to get out of the taxi. So like, and I've heard of multiple stories of like shady taxi drivers. Another friend got her purse stolen. This is a tweet that went viral of a guy who is now limping around Brussels because he was mugged at 7 p.m., which is broad daylight in Brussels. Luca Netti got his passport stolen from his hotel room. All of the conferences I have ever been to, there's always been conversations of just like, oh, we're in Bogota, be safe. And Bogota was completely fine. Like, I have never gone to an Ethereum conference where there was, like, crime and, like, robberies and anything, except it's for some reason happening all over Brussels, in the middle of Europe, with the EU center of Europe. So that's been a theme of Brussels this year. Speaking of crime, Suzu is here for some reason. I didn't know that Suzu could go to Brussels. Suzu was at Rave, apparently, just, like, raving at Rave.
Do we have a picture of this?
No, I do not have a picture of it. One of my friends said she also interviewed him for her like podcast that she's doing because she's doing a bunch of podcasts. So I kind of figured that I think we have an extradition treaty with Belgium. Apparently, he's not ready to be extradited or anything. Apparently, he just can go to Europe. So that was interesting. Wow. We also had the Bankless Party as well. So on Monday of ECC, we just had the Bankless Party for Bankless Citizens, a bunch of podcast guests, and some just friends of Bankless. Sadly, I missed it because I missed my connection in Chicago. So while everyone else was partying at the Bankless Party, I was in Chicago doing nothing, waiting for my flight. So that was a bummer. But overall, it's been a great time. Been a great ECC.
Awesome, man. Well, I know you're a bit jet-lagged. You know, we had to coordinate to find a good hour to record this. So thanks for being here. Another week for the Bankless Nation. We never miss.
Another week. We have David, never missed a weekly roll-up.
Let's talk markets for a second. So Bitcoin, what's the price in the week?
Started the week 57,300, ending the week 57,800, up about a little more than 0.5%. So uppy flat.
So the bearish factors, I guess. I mean, people in general, I don't know what the vibes were at ECC. I know it's a more research-focused, dev-focused type of conference where we talk about like serious things like, you know, based rollups, fixing fragmentation, all of these things. But I'll tell you, the crypto narrative has felt very bearish lately. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not enjoying this flat summer, flat down summer.
Flat is down now.
Yeah, it is. So Bitcoin had its first 25% drawdown. This is after a streak of 427 days. Okay, so we're 25% down. At least we were at some point during the week on Bitcoin. And this, but I guess the flip side is this was an incredible run, 427 days of a streak, and it beat the 2012 record by 63 days. So I guess another way to look at this is like we had an incredible run and we were due for a correction. I mean, 423 days is essentially up before and now down 25%. It's not the end of the world, but people are blaming the German government. Apparently, they keep selling their Bitcoin. Recall, we talked a couple roll-ups ago that, you know, Germany had a few billion, I think, in Bitcoin seizures, right? So they just sold another 362 million on the week, and they still have more. They still have 1.3 billion that they might sell.
God,
and
there's large numbers.
There's very large numbers. This is a tweet in German, so he's like, I can't. My German's a little rusty.
Hit translate post.
Let's do translate post. Okay, so this is a German MP, I believe, who is saying that instead of holding Bitcoin as a strategic reserve currency, we are selling it. And we shouldn't be doing that in Germany. We should be a bit more like the U.S., which apparently the U.S. is debating whether they should sell some of their seized Bitcoin or keep
or
it.
Or hold it.
Yeah,
which is news to me.
That's news to me as well, but maybe the point of the Americans who are thinking about this. But, like, it's a good point. Why are we selling all of this Bitcoin? We have this Bitcoin.
That's what I said when we were dumping our Bitcoin. Just take it from one department and put it in the Treasury. Just give it to the Treasury.
Exactly. The MP added, instead of selling, I recommend developing a comprehensive Bitcoin strategy. So, like, why sell when you can hold and maybe support the euro at some point in time? So, anyway, Germany's dumping on us. This was known. But apparently the markets don't like this dumpage. There's also Mt. Gox, of course. That news is out there where the distributions are finally happening, and that's still in the news. They are happening in two more months. So according to the agreement with Mt. Gox trustees, Bitstamp has 60 days to distribute the token. Kraken has 90 days to BitGo, 20 days. So there's a lot of Bitcoin that still could be sold as a result of Mt. Gox. So this type of sell pressure and the prospect of sell pressure is contributing to the flatty down market right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of just overhang. I think everyone has oversold the Mt. Gox sell pressure. I think I gave this take last week. I think the Mt. Gox sell pressure is not as much as people are at least fudding about. Like, maybe the market has digested it, but, like, in terms of perception, that's much less sell pressure. Like, the Germany's, like, dumping $1.3 billion of Bitcoin on us after they've dumped, like, $600 million of Bitcoin. That's sell pressure. Gox sell pressure, I don't really think is all that real. Anyways, we got some bullish factors too. So the Bitcoin ETFs are absorbing a lot of this sell pressure. So while Bitcoin is being sold by all of these entities, on like July 8th, by IBIT, the BlackRock ETF took in $187 million. So $187 million of buy pressure. The next day, total buy pressure of the ETFs came in at $250 million. So we're painting in some numbers of inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs, finally waking up again, no longer dormant. We'll see how long this holds, but we're pulling in a lot of this sell pressure Bitcoin into the ETFs.
It's actually super impressive. This is James Seifert, like, summing up Bitcoin ETFs doing the exact opposite of dumping during this dumpage in the first 20% drawdown since the launch. They're buying, they're doubling down. So last week, $650 million in net inflows on the week. I got to say, I'm impressed with TradFi here, David. Like, it seems like the crypto natives and traders are the paper hands here. And TradFi is just diamond handing it. They see the dip and they're buying. So, like, well done. I mean, this is a more robust set of purchasers than I think crypto anticipated. And it's great to have that support from a price perspective.
Hopefully. Yeah. On July 4th, when I think what it was the peak dumpage, I just looked at the ETH price. I think it got down to like 2,800s. And I was like, this is stupid. And also, it's the day of freedom, so I'm going to buy the freedom currency. So I just bought in solidarity with the ETH price. Feels good to buy $2,800 ETH.
The freedom currency?
Ether. It's the freedom. Sovereign. Everyone's be your own bank. It's the freedom currency. Freedom right. Day, freedom currency.
I thought you were trying to make a dollar as the freedom currency kind of joke, but you know, it's like, get off the show,
no,
David.
Ignore that.
You know, it's funny, when I was looking at the spot Bitcoin ETF charts, I noticed these gaps in the charts. So I was like, wait, what happened those days? Oh, it's because the market's closed.
The weekends.
Of course.
Yeah, it closed.
Weekends. Uh-huh. Those happen. Well, let's check in on our friend ETH. So where are we on the week?
Also, Uppy Flat starting the week at $3,100, ending the week at $3,155. Almost got above $3,200 right there. But yeah, there's that dip down to $2,850, which your boy bought right there. right at that needle,
right at the bottom. I can see you on the screen.
So they got down pretty low, and now we're back above 3,000. It's hard to like feel good about these like relatively low ETH prices. I would like it to be higher, but nonetheless, I mean, this is the buying opportunity. We know we're about to get the ETF. When we got the ETF announcement, it went from these prices up to almost $4,000, and now we are back down to these prices. So you get to buy pre-ETF announced ETH price after the ETF is announced, which I think is just a blessing.
Yep, you get another roll-up to purchase, and is a great opportunity to do that. Thanks to Kraken for the price charts, of course, and that is the place. If you're going to go buy some crypto, buy some ETH, go do it at Kraken.
Yeah, do it on Kraken.
Create an account if you haven't already. Let's talk about the ETH ETF for a second. So it's not here. We said that in the intro. So what's going on? What's going on is more paperwork is being filed. So here's Eric Balchunas, and he's going through a whole thread of all of the various S1s. That's the final paperwork from all of the issuers. You know, you've got VanEck, you've got BlackRock, you've got Bitwise, on and on, etc. The quote from one of the issuers is, "It's close to the finish line." I think that about sums it up. We're like very close to the finish line. So it could happen anytime. It could happen before the next rollup. I'm sure it will, David. This has got to be the last rollup where we don't have an ETH ETF. There's also a little bit of news from one of the issuers. It's an issuer that is, I think, top of mind because they've had the trust, which is Grayscale. So they have billions of dollars of Ether right now. And a big, I guess, source of sell pressure might be, could that Ether drain out of Grayscale and, I don't know, go on the open market? But they're taking steps to prevent that, to patch that hole. What is Grayscale doing with the ETH-E mini trust strategy?
Yeah, so the mini trust is basically a another version of their ETF, but this one with extremely low fees. And so we saw the GBTC outflows out of the Grayscale Bitcoin ETFs. And this was just the reason why we could not go up in price right after the Bitcoin ETF was approved, because the Grayscale, the ETFs were just selling because the fees were like 2.5% when everyone else had fees of 0.2%. And so they eventually rolled out the Grayscale GBTC mini trust with the very low fees. And you could roll your Grayscale ETF into the mini trust without taking a taxable event.
You say it eventually. It took them like months, right?
Yeah, like multiple months. Now we are getting the Grayscale ETH-E mini trust, apparently right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And so they are trying to plug their own wound before it even opens. And so this is a difference between the Bitcoin ETF and the ETH ETF. When the ETH ETF launches, we will have this mini trust. And so anyone selling as a result of the very high Grayscale prices will, in theory, just not sell anymore because they have the option to roll into the mini trust without paying capital gains tax and also enjoying low prices. So it allows holders to be holders. And so this, we'll see how much this plugs up sell pressure out of the Grayscale fund when the ETF gets approved and starts trading. It's only bullish. It's like, in this most bearish format, it is equivalent to the Bitcoin story. This is only a bullish addition to the ETH ETF story.
This is a chart I was just looking at prior to recording here. This is the ETH discount or premium to NAV, which we've talked about in the months before. Remember, it was not April. We were 25%.
Whoever was buying ETH in April, well done. Congrats on your gains.
Yeah. Remember, we shouted this out. This is a nice arbitrage opportunity. But I got to say, not even we were anticipating that we'd get an ETH ETF so soon. Yeah, and anyway, that now fast, that arbitrage opportunity has basically completely closed.
It's
we're
gone.
About like within a the actual spot price. So ETH was trading at a discount to spot price of Ethereum. And now it is no longer. Dude, run us by the total crypto market cap. Where are we at on the week?
2.27 trillion. Wow, that's low. I haven't seen 2.2 in a while. Bearish. Wow. Okay. Sick.
Yeah.
Also on layer two beat, we are hitting a 20.6x scaling factor. 20 Ethereums are happening on Ethereum layer twos. Brought in by some of these new layer threes on the scene. Zai consistently is posting like 100 transaction per second days consistently. I don't even know what Zai is. I guess I need to go investigate this. I don't even know where it settles. Arbitrum chain with Arbitrum AnyTrust. Cool. I'll have to investigate that. But yeah, that's been on like the layer two beat for like a number of weeks now. Just blasted through a scaling factor to new all-time highs in Ethereum scaling on layer twos.
Yeah, we've got more market stuff to talk about, including the reason why maybe stocks are up but crypto is flat. We got to talk about that. There's a conversation to be had here. Could we be wrong is a question I have for you, David. Also, tokenization seems to be really taking off in a big way. BlackRock hit a major milestone. Goldman Sachs is now throwing a hat into the ring, so we'll talk about that. And then ETH gas fees, they are down. So this is bad for fee revenue, but is it good for Ethereum or bad for Ethereum overall? So lots more to talk about. But before we get there, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our recommended exchange for 2024, that is Kraken. Go create an account.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum
Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open.
We're going to talk about stocks in just a second because they are all-time highs, basically. And we got some good inflation numbers on the week here, which partially contributed to that, the anticipation of that. So we're at 3% inflation. That was a bit better than analysts expected. So, of course, this leads to more speculation that perhaps Powell is going to dip into that easy monetary policy and begin bringing rates down. But let's talk about stocks for a minute. Have you seen this chart, David? This is the QQQ chart. It looks kind of like a crypto chart,
what
actually.
What I want the ETH chart
during
to
the
be.
Good days. Yeah.
Yeah, during the good crypto days.
NASDAQ has been on an absolute tear. And I don't know if you've seen this, but this is a correlation chart between Bitcoin and NASDAQ and the S&P. And we are at lows that we haven't seen in terms of the correlation between stocks and Bitcoin that we haven't seen since November 2023, so about a year ago. So stocks and crypto assets over the last 2 months have become increasingly discorrelated. Maybe some of the reason for that is stocks don't have Germany dumping on them. Stocks don't have a Mt. Gox unlock. That's part of the reason. But I think we also have to be open to a broader reason. And a question I have for you is like, do you think we are overly, like, do you think we could be wrong about this bull cycle? It seems like AI is getting a lot of attention. Do you know the narrative from VCs 18 months ago was like, pivot to AI? Well, it seems like stocks have really pivoted to AI, and they're getting a ton of the attention, a ton of the inflows here. If we look at the biggest stock gainers, the S&P 500, the top 10 biggest stocks, number of these are kind of like the tech stocks, contributed 77% of the index's total returns. So it's these big tech companies, these big AI plays, basically, that are driving the stock market up to this point in time. And they've outperformed crypto in a lot of ways, at least recently. You think we have something to worry about here?
Usually when we are meaningfully decoupled from the S&P and the stock market, it actually is like in the negative way, as in they're going up and we're going down. I've never seen us like be meaningfully decoupled to the upside, maybe except for a few acute circumstances. I don't know why that is. AI is like the at least winning the attention game, I think, as you said, just because like it's easy to understand AI. It's still hard to understand crypto. That is maybe another theme of ETHCC that I've noticed, is like all the contents are getting like more technical, not less. We are talking about even deeper infra and even like more niche parts of like scaling strategies and stuff like this. We are not talking about consumer apps. And like it's definitely it's getting more insular in our world, in the crypto world. Like people aren't coming in. Like you can see that in crypto media, like YouTube numbers. Meanwhile, like this AI content sphere is exploding. It might just be an attention game. Also, at the same time, I think this industry is kind of splitting between Between the 4-year cycles. I think part of this industry is trying to stay on the like crack cocaine addiction of the 4-year cycles. And then another part of the cycle, another part of the industry is like, okay, like we're professional now. We have tokenization, we have ETFs. We're going to smooth ourselves out and like get off of this rodeo and just like be incrementally better every single month. And that between, that's just like kind of like, I think contributing to some of the bad vibes. Also definitely the bad vibes are like, we don't have the bull market and there is a bull market somewhere else. And it's in the tech stocks.
Getting a little jealous here, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting jealous.
People are. My base case is still be patient, slow summer, and then yeah. We're going to pick back up in fall. And ETH ETF is monumental, and crypto hasn't had its full bull cycle. And I'm with Raoul Paul.
I don't think we have a bull market. I think we have the ETF inflows.
Well, sure, but I actually think we'll get a banana zone, as Raoul Paul likes to say. I still think that's coming. That's still my base case, but it's not inevitable. There is some sort of risk in my mind, like something to watch out for is like, well, what if we miss this cycle, right? It's like I want to be open to that potentiality as well, that kind of like AI sucks all of the oxygen out of the room. And this cycle, we just haven't hit the consumer use cases here. Mm-hmm. Like we are too insular. Mm-hmm. We're too focused on our infrastructure, and we're not really developing new use cases. That said, let's get to tokenization, because this is a major narrative and major use case that is just heating up, that
growing.
TradFi is... Yeah, they're falling over themselves excited about. So you remember the Biddle Fund, which is the tokenized treasuries brought to you by BlackRock on Ethereum. Mm-hmm. So it's BlackRock opening a bank branch, let's say, on a Ethereum mainnet. Well, that just hit $500 million, which is a major milestone and is going up only. Look at this. This is the tokenized treasury market. Now it's getting close to massive growth. A year ago, we were less than $100 million. And so we are, a little bit over a year ago, but it was like massive growth in tokenized treasuries. And you can see it's really accelerated recently. David, I went over recently and I signed up for one of these tokenized treasury platforms, and I deposited a little bit into Biddle. So I got the full UX experience. I got to tell you, there's a lot of paperwork still involved. This is not like going through like
KYC, right?
KYC and like accreditation and blah, blah, blah. So it's like paperwork. And at the end of that, you get like, your wallet can do some tokenization things.
Yeah,
so
you're added to the whitelist. Right.
It's this
weird
hybrid.
You receive the token contract. Yeah.
Yeah, it's this weird hybrid, but it's easier than going through kind of like the buying T-bills in a brokerage, at least like for me, for someone who's crypto native. So I think there's a lot of potential here, and BlackRock certainly thinks so. I know when we were going through our ETH narratives, we were like, what's the big one that's going to sell for TradFi? And tokenization in both of our pitches came to the forefront. I think that's here. I think that is going to do big things. And once the Ethereum ETF comes out, I think all of these major Wall Street TradFi shops will start talking a lot more about tokenization.
Yeah, I think that's right. 500 million is a pretty good milestone. I would like to see it hit a billion. And I think it's just heading straight there. Like the growth on it is like not slowing down at all. And once BlackRock gets in, like people FOMO, like BlackRock putting in like $100 billion on chain is going to cause people to like follow on and do the same thing that they're doing. It is worth shouting out that Franklin Templeton did get there first. Franklin Templeton has done like the tokenization play, the real world asset tokenization play on Ethereum. But when BlackRock does it, it's different. Coincidentally, Goldman Sachs announced this year that they plan to launch 3 tokenized funds this year. We didn't get too much details about like where the funds will be, but like I'm like, my default is Ethereum layer one, that makes sense. They say the primary focus of these funds is the US fund sector, the European debt markets as well, and then they also want to create marketplaces for tokenized assets, which is a pretty strong investment into the world of tokenized assets coming out of Goldman Sachs. A pretty interesting report from McKinsey says that they are forecasting $2 to $4 trillion market cap of just real world asset tokenization by 2030. So a little excerpt from their report here, which was definitely worth reading. There's a link in the show notes saying, we estimate that the tokenized market cap across asset classes could reach about $2 trillion by 2030, excluding stable coins. So not cryptocurrencies, not stable coins. So $2 trillion of stuff tokenized that aren't dollars. And then they say the pessimistic and optimistic scenarios range from 1 trillion to about 4 trillion. And then they kind of list off an order of operations of what could be tokenized. Cash and deposits, which they excluded from the total. Total comes in number one. We already have that. That's stablecoins. Mutual funds and ETFs coming in number two. Loans and securitization. Bonds and exchange traded notes. That's kind of like wave one. Alternative funds, alternative assets, unlisted equities. Precious metals, which we actually have, we did get some gold tokenization earlier, like last month. Publicly listed equities, these are stocks, intangible assets, and derivatives would be like the last of the things to come. But they start to predict some of these things will all happen by 2030. So TradFi getting really bullish, tokenization.
Yeah, this is just TradFi swapping out their infrastructure, right? Replacing kind of like, you know, the fax machine and mainframes with something new and more open, more permissionless, with more innovation. David, one thing that has also happened, we talked about the scaling factor of layer two as being like 20x, and that's a great thing. A byproduct of that is ETH gas is low, very low. I don't know if you've gone on mainnet recently. Right. It's but it's pretty cheap to do things. And of course, there's a bull case for this and a bear case for this, as always, right? So the bull case for this is, hey, ETH fees are cheap again. That's fantastic. And they have just
fixed the fee markets.
We fixed the fee market. Ethereum has expanded into blob space. You know, traffic has kind of migrated to layer twos. Layer twos are incredibly cheap. This is the rent paid from layer twos to layer ones. Do you see it in March just like falling
it
off
goes
a cliff?
2-0. It looks like the chart breaks actually.
And the reason is, of course, Ethereum upgrade. With the most recent Ethereum upgrade, we had blob space, really cheap transaction fees. We call it the HOV lane for layer twos, essentially. And the fees layer twos are paying to Ethereum just dropped off a cliff ever since, which is great for consumers because transaction fees are super cheap on layer twos. Now, that's the bull case. The bear case is, where'd all of our revenue go? ETH the asset is no longer deflationary, at least right now. And so, like, where's kind of the revenue for this? So I don't know if you've seen some of these comparisons, but there've been some reports recently. You know, we've talked about Ether, the triple point asset, and one of the points on that is a cash flowing asset, right? A productive asset, something that, you know, distributes cash flows. Well, Ether's cash flows haven't been as high as they have been previously. In fact, Tron is catching up in terms of the cash flows that it is producing. And for the month of June, it was actually like you're verging on higher than Ethereum. Here's a report from Michael from the DeFi report, who I'm actually going to have on next week, David, while you're out, and you know, chat to him about this. But he compares Sol and the fee revenue that Sol is generating through MEV and transaction fees to Ether, and asked the question, should Sol, that's Solana, be trading at an 83% discount to Ether when their fees aren't, you know, like an 83% discount? I don't know if you have any takes on this, and this is kind of an unresolved question that I'm going to be, and I think we will collectively be digging into more of, but ETH fees, as it's outsourcing its execution layer to layer twos, ETH fees are going down, at least in the short run. Do you have any takes here?
Yeah, just to put one more metric on it, we have printed about 150,000 Ether since the middle of April. Because we have not just been able to sustain high layer one gas fees. I think this was kind of like a big conversation as to what would happen once we spin up the layer twos and we also introduce 4844, we introduce blobs. My kind of default scenario was that layer one gas fees would hold steady and stop increasing, and then demand for layer twos would also go up. So induced demand, but we would still transact on the layer one. It does actually seem that like people are just migrating away from the Ethereum layer one. And I actually like find that in myself. Like whenever I'm using Ethereum, it's actually generally like layer two most of the time. And so I've seen some of my own behavior shift onto
that was always the plan, though.
Away from the Ethereum.
That was always the plan.
Yeah, that was always the plan. We would say like, yeah, you like the layer one's not for users, it's for chains. And I guess we just don't have enough chains to displace the loss of users. But in terms of priorities of like what we want, like I prioritize layer two free transactions over prioritizing the fee bird. Like that we want, I want to grow GDP, not grow revenue. And when I see like layer two activity at all-time highs at 20x scaling factor, which like it blew through 10, it went straight to 20. To me, that's I'll take the gambit of a lesser value accrual to ETH asset if I can get more activity on more blocks.
I agree with you there. I think that is Ethereum's long-term game and certainly what it's playing to make layer two fees as cheap as possible and accrue all of the GDP and prop up Ether as a monetary asset. But we'll see how that plays out. The market's trying to figure out the pricing of all these various assets in comparison. We have more coming up, and this is big. So crypto has been formally adopted as part of the Republican platform. So what does that mean? Wow. It actually includes the right to go bankless. So we'll talk about that. Also, a long-awaited Ethereum documentary is about to get released. I think you've got the inside scoop on that, David. I want to hear. And Celsius wants its customers to return money to them?
Yeah.
This is going in the wrong direction here.
And before we get to all that hot, juicy news, we're going to go hear from our friends and sponsors over at Mantle, the ecosystem with the multi-billion dollar treasury that goes and farms airdrops so CM ETH holders don't have to. I bet you didn't know that, Ryan, but they do that for you. Let's go hear from them right now. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from Eigen DA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. The Uniswap extension is almost here. The self-custody wallet created by the most trusted team in DeFi, Uniswap Labs, designed to make swapping feel effortless. This extension lives in your browser's sidebar, letting you swap, sign transactions, and send or receive crypto without ever losing your place on the internet. Plus, with human-readable transaction messages, you'll always know exactly what you're signing. Navigate a multi-chain world effortlessly with support for 11 chains like Ethereum Mainnet, Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. No more chain switching or token importing. All your assets are right where you need them to be. The Uniswap extension is designed to level up your swapping experience with other Uniswap Labs products as well. Easily onboard to the extension using the Uniswap mobile wallet to begin managing your assets across platforms and take advantage of smooth, seamless synergies with the Uniswap web app. So go and sign up for the waitlist today and download the Uniswap app and claim your free username to get added to the extension waitlist. The Uniswap extension is available later this month to everyone. Just another way Uniswap is helping you swap smarter.
David, did you know 2024 is an election year in the US anyway?
There's one thing that I'm aware of.
I wish I wasn't aware of it some weeks. But this is a good outcome, at least for crypto. Mm-hmm. So the GOP platform, that is the Republicans in the United States of America, they have rolled out a paragraph. They put together their platform documentation. This is what the party stands for. This is our party platform. They had a section in there called Championing Innovation. And at the very top of that section, there was a paragraph about crypto. So it said this: Republicans will end Democrats' unlawful and un-American crypto crackdown and oppose the creation of a central bank digital currency. We will defend the right to mine Bitcoin and ensure every American has the right to self-custody of their digital assets and transact free from government surveillance and control. That paragraph is actually exactly what we want. The right to self-custody means the right to go bankless. Of course, we should have that. It's great that a major political party is enshrining that. And to transact free from government surveillance and control. Well, that's very interesting. That has implications for privacy technology and some of the court cases we're hearing about Tornado Cash. The right to mine Bitcoin is great, too. And then ending the Democrats' unlawful crypto crackdown. So it's acknowledging that regulators have overstepped, that Operation Choke Point has been a thing. I don't know. Great paragraph. You couldn't ask for better. This is Nick Carter saying they're going to end the crypto crackdown. No CBDC, the right to mine, right to self-custody, right to transact freely. Couldn't really ask for anything more.
I was talking to some of my more liberal friends about this, and because I remember having a conversation with them way back when Donald Trump was first saying some positive words about crypto. And the reaction was like, well, he can just say anything he wants. He basically has a blank check. He doesn't have to actually fulfill anything. Where's the party platform? I would like a party platform. And this is that.
Okay.
We actually got in writing a party platform. Yeah. And so this is a very meaningful step forward. You said we couldn't ask for more. I could ask for a little bit more. Like, it's kind of a short
what
sentence.
Do you want?
I would like
what
a crypto section, like more
yeah,
bullets.
It sure.
was a lot, like, kind of packed into that sentence.
But they said the right things, but there's not a lot
right
of
things.
Detail
it's a
behind
strong,
this.
It's a very strong foot in the door. You can't hate it.
I get it. I do have some advice for the Democrats, though, if they want to, check this and, counteract this from the Republicans.
Make a
just
one.
Say the same thing. Just copy and paste the statement and do that. And then you neutralize it. Like,
and if you don't, it's kind of telling.
It's kind of stupid and also kind of telling. But, like, why are you letting the Republicans have an advantage for you? Just, like, just say the same thing. Like, what's wrong with this? Like, what?
Yeah, especially that last line. The right to self-custody, their digital assets, and then transact from government surveillance and control.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I feel like there's a Tornado Cash element in there. Like, transact
for sure,
free
for
from
sure.
government surveillance and control. That feels freeing of Tornado Cash to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, but to your friend's points, now it's a matter of holding them to it, course, and holding all of our political leadership to this. This is interesting, David. Donald Trump is going to be speaking at the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin 2024.
That
Which
is
Bitcoin
soon.
Conference is this? This is
this
July
is in Nashville
25th.
And at the end of this month. When is that? That is in like 2 weeks.
Crazy.
That is in 2 weeks.
I think this is absolutely massive news, right? This gives you a scope for how much on the radar, like in kind of 2024 election, crypto actually is. So it didn't show up in the Biden v. Trump debate. Yeah. Maybe it will in future debates. Biden barely showed up to that debate, though, I got to say. Like, I mean, it was they didn't talk about a lot of substance.
Talked about golf.
I think this is one of the top 10 things, would you say? 10, 15 things, though, in the election?
Events that happen in crypto history?
Or just issues. No, issues in the election. In the 2024 election, I think crypto is in the top dozen things to be a kind of wedge issues. This is where I'm different types of things to talk about. Like, it's high up there. It's on the list, anyway.
I think when Republicans and Democrats are going head-to-head, they are not going to talk about crypto. But that actually underserves how big of a thing crypto is. Like, I think basically every single I think a lot of Bitcoiners are like politically reserved. Like, think about Eric Voorhees types.
Yeah,
like,
they're libertarian class.
Highly libertarian. Yeah. They resent the concept of voting because they hate the two-party system. They don't believe it.
Yeah.
But then Donald Trump comes. And Donald Trump is going to pull so many non-voting Bitcoiners out of the corners of America, and it is going to be this party that runs under the radar of general polling because they've always been an anti-voter.
I agree. Donald Trump, orange president, orange coin. You know, it's like it works. Here's a fascinating poll done by Grayscale. It's actually a Harris poll conducted on behalf of Grayscale. So this is
funded by Grayscale, operated by the Harris poll.
Yeah. So 2024 U.S. election, some of the key takeaways, 47% of voters, of all voters they surveyed, expect some of their investment portfolio to include crypto.
That's a lot. Right?
And this partially, I think, is from the ETF, the Bitcoin ETF.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are like, I don't know, it could be illegal. I don't know how to buy this thing. It's like, oh, it's in my Schwab accounts and Fidelity. Okay.
Great.
Yeah. Like, I want that. All that upside. I don't want just the people who use, crypto exchanges, the crypto bros to get all that.
It's up from 40% last year. So 40% this year,
7%.
40% last year. We gained 7% of all voters now own more crypto.
Yeah, wow. People don't like to vote against their bags. Like, we know this,
no,
right?
No, absolutely not. That is a direct financial relationship do you have to your ballot.
This is also, I think, telling. Crypto is a bipartisan topic. So there's similar ownership rates among Republicans, 18%, and Democrats, 19%. Democrats even have more crypto than Republicans. Wow. 18% of voters are more interested in investing in Bitcoin and other crypto assets thanks to the Bitcoin ETF.
Nice.
This is hugely legitimizing. And 20% were compelled by the halving. Oh, cool. That's great.
Got some education to do.
Some other stuff going on in Congress, by the way. I don't know if you know, but as we're recording this, as we record this on Thursday, it comes out tomorrow, so you guys might have more information about this. You know, the SAB 121 bill, mm-hmm. that the repeal of that got passed, made through the House, made through Senate, right. And then Biden vetoed it? Uh-huh. Well, there's a way to unveto a veto, right? You have to get... Right.
You can Trump a veto.
Two-thirds majority in the Senate can trump a veto, right? So that'd be
which
a lot
we did not get.
Democrats.
We did not get that in the first vote. So some people will have to change their votes as a result of like new information that they've had in the past like months.
And
or so.
As far as these things go, it wasn't even close, right? Like a whole bunch of Democrat senators would have to totally throw Biden under the bus and be like, we don't respect your veto.
Right.
So very unlikely to happen. But what if, I'm just saying, what if that vote is happening actually today? And if that happened, like call it a 0.1% chance, that would be absolutely crazy, David. I don't even want to think about it. So it's but like it's in front of the Senate. And the nice thing about this, it gives all of the senators another kind of, you know, are you pro crypto or are you anti-crypto?
That's what I'm interested about.
Put you on the record.
Like, how many people like the vote is maybe will change? And what direction is it going to change and by how many people? Even if we don't get there, it would be cool to see like three more senators, four more senators come over to the crypto side.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Celsius. You remember old Alex Mashinsky and Celsius who scammed a whole bunch of people?
My favorite man, the guy with the t-shirt that says to not trust banks.
He was right. He didn't tell us that Celsius
he didn't tell us that he was the bank that he
and
should
not to trust. That was in the disclaimer on the back of the t-shirt. But anyway, Celsius is suing their users. You might ask for why. Like, why is Celsius trying to get some clawback? So apparently, within 90 days prior to a set of savvy users, you know, who knows if they read the tea leaves, they saw something in advance, but
savvy or lucky or something.
Lucky or something. Or maybe they knew something. Who knows? But they withdrew some of their funds from Celsius, as one does, right? I'm a little bit nervous about this. You know, I'm going to withdraw my crypto, keep it, or withdraw and sell it, or something like this. Celsius is looking to claw back the funds from those who withdrew, I think, within the past 90 days, I believe.
90 days before it froze withdrawals. Not only are they looking to claw back funds, they are looking to claw back funds in kind, but you pay them back in dollars. So if you withdrew Bitcoin at like the $25,000 Bitcoin price that it was at, you now owe them $65,000 Bitcoin. That's the bill that you now have from Celsius.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so like
brutal.
So how long ago was that? That was over a year ago. So now people are receiving bills at somewhere between 2 to 4 times the value of what they withdrew in dollar amount, like 18 months later.
Yes.
Like that maybe they gambled it away on DeGen coins. Like that is just too
or
long.
Just sold
it's too
it
long.
Or just
did something
totally.
Else.
You can't 100%. You can't expect
if you wanted to do this, you needed to have done this immediately after. Not a year and a half.
Yeah. And so imagine you like your Celsius experience and like, you know, like I got out or I got some portion of my funds out. And then you get this nasty letter to your house or email. They probably sent it in multiple ways just saying, yeah, you owe us X thousands of dollars, right? For the funds that you withdrew 90 days to us going bankrupt. Wow. And if you want to fight that, you have to go hire a lawyer. Just like
which are also expensive.
Screwing over retail yet again. So anyway, that's going on. Apparently, this is pretty common in bankruptcy cases, by the way, right? So like there is this window. If you go to other bankruptcy cases that have been like this, not in crypto, but like there's this window of time where you can claw back some of the funds. So this is not without precedent. It's not coming out of completely left field. But the one thing that is incredibly weird is to ask for you know, the crypto assets themselves that have appreciated by, you know, massive amounts, you know, two to 10x since the time that the bankruptcy
that's going to be fought in court, because there's probably a lot of retail people who are very upset about this, but there's also a few like whales who can definitely fund a legal campaign against
I'm sure they'll class action it, I'm sure they'll figure it out anyway. It's kind of annoying.
It wasn't a year and a half ago. It was a year ago, by the way. Yeah. Okay. How time does not fly, I guess, in this industry.
Yeah. Well, here's something that's been in progress for a while, which is the ETH documentary. At least this is one of several documentaries, I think, being created about Ethereum. But this is one I was particularly excited about. So a trailer is coming out pretty soon. Anyway, give us the scoop.
Yeah. So this used to be called Ethereum, the Infinite Garden. This is Carrie Warpin's documentary, which many Ethereum community members are in it. I don't know if we are in it, but we were filmed in it. Cameras came to my house and then they recorded a weekly roll up with you and I.
Oh, that's right. I don't even remember doing that. That was like
that was back when I lived in San Diego, bro. Yeah, they also have some footage of some like an interview I did of Vitalik in 2021 at ETHCC, so 3 years ago. Wow. So they've been just like at every single Ethereum conference, like just collecting footage. They did this fundraise via Mirror where they raised $3 million in ETH. Mariano Conti and a few other people are like producers of this because they minted the NFT by donating to. By donating to just the fundraising effort. It's finally coming out. It's finally coming out. So July 23rd on Zora is the official trailer where anyone can mint it to support the distribution. And then there's also rewards for being a top 20 minter. So if you're a top 20 minter, you get a ticket to the in-person pre-premiere. There's a bunch of other rewards as well. I am very excited about this. I would love to. I've been waiting for this. This has like changed form over the years. Like I said, it started off as like the Infinite Garden. Now it's like Ethereum Stories. The website is ethereumfilm.xyz. The official premiere, September 18th, available on traditional streaming platforms in the winter of this year, which is pretty cool.
What do you think we're going to get? Streaming platforms. Do you think we'll get Netflix? Hulu?
I
hope we get one of the big ones.
Netflix.
Yeah. I hope we get some wide distribution behind this. That'd be great. Yeah.
Moving on to raises. A Bankless Ventures raise happened this week. This is Rome Protocol, who raised $9 million. This is a Solana Ethereum hybrid protocol. Pretty interesting. This Rome uses Solana as a decentralized shared sequencer for Ethereum rollups. So Ethereum rollups can use the level of decentralization that Solana has for their sequencer to sequence transactions, process transactions, and then create a proof to submit it to Ethereum. So Ethereum layer two, Solana the layer one as the sequencer, and then back down to the Ethereum layer one. So confirm transactions faster. You can enhance privacy and scalability, reduce blockchain costs, leverage composability for cross-chain transactions. That's what a shared sequencer does. So multiple rollups can use Rome and they can shared sequence between each other. Pretty cool. It's like kind of taking the components of both ecosystems and smashing them together. Pretty excited about it.
Will this bring peace and harmony across all the tribes and unify them? Because it's, you know, Solana, Ethereum, you know, we're all getting along here. We're all collaborating on this solution.
Yeah, we'll still fight on Twitter, but we're also like, I do think in the fullness of time, crypto projects just do meld together.
Yeah.
The modular world will also be a highly composable one. And that's right. Is what's happening here.
The components all kind of fit together. When's this coming out, David?
When is mainnet? I am unsure.
That's because Rome wasn't built in a day.
Did you just ask that question just to say that?
Oh, man.
Oh,
let's
you
get to
did.
The meme of the week. I did. You walked right into it.
I walked right into that.
We were looking at the shout out to the event that you were talking about earlier, but I guess you were on a flight. You were on some death flight, right? From Chicago.
Yeah, so on Monday, the first day of ECC Monday, we bankless to a party at a cute little cocktail party on a rooftop. I was not there. I got so many pictures of friends at my party while I was in Chicago. And they're like, hey, where are you? And I'm like, I am in Chicago. I am sorry.
Neither you nor I went. Unfortunately, couldn't make it. But a lot of Bankless citizens there and members of the Bankless team.
I heard it was
a great
time.
So,
I heard it was a great time.
Well, glad to everyone who made it out. Thank you, Bankless citizens, for supporting us and for being there. It's a great opportunity. I always say this, great opportunity to meet in person, yet I'm almost never there. I will be at Permissionless though, in October. Very excited about that. So that's happening. David, let's end with a moment of Zen. And since this will be the last weekly roll-up without Ethereum ETF.
Absolutely, right? 100% guarantee. 100%?
We got a guarantee. Okay, so we've got the David Hoffman guarantee. We should go celebrate by watching a Bitwise ETF commercial, which a new one popped out this week. So enjoy that. I will end with some disclaimers. Of course, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everybody, but we're glad you're with us on the bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Hello, I'm Ethereum.
And I'm Big Tech.
Oh, losing a user?
We are really going to miss you, but that stays too. We like to make sure that they don't take anything with them.
So her posts, her photos, her followers?
Yeah, they all stay here for safekeeping.
And with me, users can keep all their things when they leave an app.
Yeah, but then we'd have nothing to remember them by. Miss you already.
You play guitar?
No. Why would I do that?